Okay, we are here with the FasterFatLossZone.com exclusive audio series. My special guest today is going to be a very familiar name to just about everybody. He is a co-author of numerous books, including The New Rules of Lifting, The New Rules of Lifting for Women, Afterburn 1 and 2, Real World Fat Loss. He's a featured speaker on the Perform Better circuit. Just came out with a new DVD DVD that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alan Cosgrove, welcome to the audio series.
Thank you for having me.
We've been waiting to have you on here because we had Rachel on a few weeks ago.
She'd be much better.
Well, it was right after her big deadlift record.
Uh-huh.
So it was pretty exciting to have her on.
Well, it kind of paid to the idea that we you couldn't train for strength and endurance at the same time, eh?
Yeah, it's pretty much shot that one down, didn't it? Well, let's kind of dig right into this. The first thing I want to talk about, which I think is kind of like one of the most important things, especially in your life, obviously, your life was essentially saved by the people that donated money to cancer research and for treatment. And in response to this, you put together what I think is one of the coolest projects that I think I've ever seen, and it's called Lift Strong. And I just want you to start off by explaining, you know, how this project came together and you know, what is it supporting and where do these proceeds go?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. The government hasn't been really very helpful in helping to fund further cancer research. And the reality is that there's a lot of things that can be done just purely with money to discover new drugs and new treatments, and without money nothing happens. So what happened is, I think it's, you know, when you get a new car and you think you're the only person that has that color or that car, and suddenly you start being aware of everything out there. When I got first diagnosed, I started realizing the number of leaflets or promotions that we get in the mail for, you know, a breast cancer walk or something. And Rachel got involved with an organization called Team in Training. And all this time through my treatment, I kept seeing all these promotions for the endurance community who were really doing something. And Team in Training are an amazing organization. They're worldwide, and they raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And lymphoma was what I was diagnosed with. But what happened, they actually funded and discovered a drug called Gleevec, I believe, that is now a standard practice in the care of leukemia patients. It changed the standard of care for leukemia just purely because of donations of these people going and doing triathlons and running. Now, I came from a martial arts background, and I'm more in the strength training side of things. And it just hit me that we, as a single entity, the endurance community, were literally kicking our arse, and they were raising all this money, and why were we so high and mighty that we couldn't do something? So I emailed a few colleagues in the industry and said, listen, the best thing we can do is, Team in Training is an educational company. They help prepare people for triathlons and marathons and century rides. Just give me some information and we'll put it in a manual. And the plan was that I would have this maybe 50-page, 100-page manual that would sell and that the profits would go. And you know how the story ends. It's 172 pages it ended up being. I mean, everybody just contributed beyond anything I could imagine. And it's so good that even if it wasn't going to charity, I think if you're interested in training, you should pick it up. And that's available at liftstrong.com. And all the proceeds go to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and they distribute it as best as they see fit. But we're done well. It started off strong, and it has tapered off, I must confess. So I'll either have to bring out Lift Strong 2 and make everybody buy that, or just we'll keep doing it. But I mean, if I sold one a year, that money goes to Leukemia and Lymphoma,
right?
And that makes a difference. You know, if I sell, you know, 100 a day, I don't see any of that money. It all goes to Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And trust me, there's people like me who are very grateful for those donations.
Yeah, I can understand that. It was really great to take part in that, and you look at the authors in that thing, and it's just, you name somebody that has any prominence in the fitness industry, and they were involved in that. So it's a really remarkable project in and of itself, and the information in there, geez, you can't beat it. So it's, like you said, if you have any interest in training, get it. But even if you want to just make a little donation, give it as a gift. It's a terrific
gift. Give it to your trainer or your friend. just buy it for your trainer, and just the money goes to a good cause, and it's we'd appreciate it.
All right, let's dig into the fat loss stuff, because I think that's why everybody's listening, more or less. One of the things that I think is really cool, having seen you present on several occasions and having the benefit of just hanging out and talking with you over beers and such.
Beers? What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
It is true. I've seen it happen. But you've established a hierarchy of fat loss based training. And all this is based on your real world experiences working with, 300 some clients a week over, 10, 12 years. Do me a favor and just for everybody listening, explain what the hierarchy is, and then explain how that evolved into what you're doing with people now.
Okay. As you already said, Bill, I think there's a disconnect in the training world between information and action. There's guys that can quote, research to you all day long, and there's guys who are in the field working with people. And there's a lot of stuff that seems to work. If you look at the Biggest Loser show, it's quite popular. But I don't think you can fail if you can exercise for 10 hours a day. I don't think you can go wrong. But when you get to the reality, I think a better show would be that people get to train 3 days a week for an hour, and we'll see how well they do,
Right.
A reality-based program. So I worked in the real world, and I found that certain things seem to work better than other things. So rather than, I'm a huge Bruce Lee geek, where I'm always quoting, absorb what is useful, reject what is useless. Rather than discount a method as being ineffective, I just looked at what methods would be more effective, and it's always nice to talk about this because I get misquoted a lot. A lot of people think that I think aerobic training is completely worthless. What I've always said is that in a hierarchy of activities, it's the least important. It's the last thing I'll add. So the hierarchy of fat loss really came down to, number one would be nutrition. You can get lean without exercising at all. So number one has to be nutrition. And everything else, exercise-wise, is secondary. So if you look at someone's daily energy expenditure, we're looking at your resting metabolic rate plus your activities plus any dietary-induced thermogenesis. But the biggest chunk is always the resting metabolic rate. So any activities that would target that part of the total energy expenditure pie, so to speak, were obviously, there's more there to work with,
Right.
So you started realizing that as your metabolism is based upon largely on muscle mass, it seemed that resistance training exercise had to be of higher importance. So my hierarchy came that nutrition was number one, and number two is any activity done that could elevate metabolism, promote muscle mass, and burn calories. That was number two. And then from that, it was like, well, what else could I do? Well, there are activities such as interval training that will elevate metabolism and will burn calories, but they won't necessarily keep the muscle. So if I have time, I will do those. And then rounding out the sort of four would be activities that just burn up calories, and that's the lower intensity cardio. So I took that and broke it down, and it became, from the exercise point of view, that metabolic resistance training, as you've called it, which really just means using resistance training to target the metabolic end of the continuum as opposed to the nervous system end, as opposed to doing sets of one. Then it would be anaerobic interval training, then aerobic interval training, then a steady state higher intensity to a steady state lower intensity. So basically it's just an intensity continuum. The least intense activities were at the bottom of the hierarchy. So it was one of these things, when you work with a client who's maybe a mother of three and, you know, plays tennis twice a week and wants to lose fat, and she can give you 2.5 hours, there's really not a whole lot of room for jogging or stuff like that in the program. You know, we needed to use more aggressive is a strong word, but more aggressive protocols, and that's where some of the stuff came from.
Right. Just a little off the beaten path here. Do you think when you're dealing with female clients who've never really exercised intensely that this hierarchy takes a little bit of convincing?
I think it can take a little bit of convincing. I think the media is brainwashed that it's something you wrote a long time ago, Bill, where people think that aerobic means fat burning.
Right.
And that there's no relationship at all between those two. So they tend to take a lot more convincing, I would expect. They think that they'll can do it with just steady state cardio. They think they'll do it. I tend not to have to convince too many people at this point in my career. They tend to seek me out for this stuff. But
right.
The way I would do it with the way I would introduce it to a population that had never used it is I would mix resistance training with the interval training within the same training session.
Mm-hmm.
So with their goal being that physiologically, if I had you run hard for 30 seconds and rest for 30 seconds, or do squats for 30 seconds and rest for 30 seconds, physiologically, you know, there's similar responses there.
Right.
So I'd mix those two things. I just the low intensity aerobic stuff, just if I have time, I'll use that. It just I don't usually get that gift. So the key with these clients is to show them, you know, here's how much time we've got, and we've got to, you know, make the most of it. If we have more time, we'll add in more activities, but we're not going to work from the bottom up. You know, we're not going to go for a walk every day for someone. The other thing is in with your physical therapy background, you'll appreciate this. I've had people tell me that with obese clients, they start them on a cardiovascular program because strength training is too much stress on the joints.
Right.
Well, walking a mile is 2,000 plyometric repetitions, and jogging a mile is about 1,500 at forces of about 1.5 to 2 body weight. So a circuit of doing 10 squats, 10 push-ups, 10 squats, 10 push-ups for the same 10 or 15 minutes may end up in a result, you know, of maybe 200 reps as opposed to 2,000, and
right.
It'll be less than body weight. So the joint stress argument doesn't really hold water either.
Yeah, I don't think people have really thought it through. And I think, you know, to your credit, you know, one of the things that stands out in everything that you've done or everything that you've written is you're just a really, you know, logical thinker, and you actually calculate out this stuff that a lot of people just kind of take for granted, and you can literally show the numbers that you know your way is actually much more effective. So you know,
no,
my hat's off to you in that regard.
Thank you. That's one of the part that people miss when they hear, you know, people like me talk is that I don't have a religious attachment to this. This is just, I got on the logic train and started looking at things.
Right.
And some people never get on the logic train. They just stay on the dogma train. And it didn't make sense to me that, you know, it's some of the other things like, you know, you walk around on your calves all the time, so the way to make them grow is to do a lot of work for them. I'm like, wow, so the reason that they can't grow is because you did a lot of work. And to grow, you'll do a lot of work. Like, that doesn't make any sense when you get
right.
on the logic chain. So this stuff,
right.
it didn't make sense to me that you burned more fat going slower, therefore it would be more effective. Because if we continue to the next stop on the logic chain, then sleeping would be the primary fat loss activity that we could come up with.
Exactly.
And that really hasn't worked out too well.
That's good. I like that. I'm going to have to steal that one too. All right. Since eating is of primary importance, because obviously we know that we can lose fat without exercise if we manipulate the eating plan. If we're taking a fat loss client's eating plan, how are we going to manipulate that in the initial phases, at least, to get somebody going in the right direction?
Okay, well, there's a few steps here, and again, there's a lot of stuff I'm going to say that sounds like my opinion, but most of it's at this point is scientific fact. I think there's a couple of cool studies on meal frequency that you need to look at first of all. One is on boxers, and they went from 2 meals a day to 6 meals a day, same total calories, but the 6 meals a day lost more fat. Okay. Now there's not a lot of studies on meal frequency that show an effect, but most of the studies are not done on an active population trying to get leaner. But there are studies showing that if we take a regular meal frequency and make it irregular, or we take a group of people who are, you know, used to eating 4 meals a day and switch them to 3 meals a day, keeping the calories the same, both those groups, when they go from a regular frequency to an irregular, or go from 4 meals a day to 3 meals a day, they always gain body fat and weight, even if calories are the same. So before we even look at calories, we have to see that there's probably a mechanism with frequency, just making sure that you get 4 to 6 meals per day every day, eating on the clock. Thermic effect of feeding seems to go up when you're eating at very specific time intervals. So number one is always frequency. And sometimes, Bill, to be honest, people will frequently hear this. With a lot of people, I'll tell them, eat whatever you want, but you have to eat the same portion of food every 2 hours the whole time you're awake. So yeah. you don't start the day with a large pizza, because you couldn't eat one in 2 hours. So when we start doing that, people start to make better choices and make better portion choices too. So sometimes right. just telling them to do that is all I need to do. The second thing is, and I think we're moved away from it a bit, is the idea that a calorie is just a calorie. And in my real world fat loss DVD, I think I've got 15 studies showing that a reduced carbohydrate intake increases fat loss compared to the same calories of a higher carbohydrate intake. So a reduced carbohydrate, higher protein diet appears to have a metabolic advantage. There's also a cool study from Ketchwick and Pawan. No one has heard of this study except for me, I think. And it was from 1957. And they put people on 3 hypocaloric diets. Group 1 did 1,000 calories at 90% fat, and they lost 0.9 pounds per day. Group 2 did 1,000 calories, 90% protein, and they lost 0.6 pounds per day. And group 3 did 1,000 calories at 90% carbs, and they actually gained slightly.
Wow.
So
that's remarkable.
They didn't gain a lot, but you can see it's not just about the calories.
Right.
And there's another study that came out in 2003, which is, now I'll contradict myself. They did a low-fat, low-calorie diet for 12 weeks, and they lost 17 pounds. They did a higher calorie, 2,100 calories, low-carb diet for 12 weeks and lost 20 pounds. So they actually ate more food and lost a little more fat. But then when they put the low-carb group on the same calories, so it was low-carb and low-calorie, they lost 23 pounds. So that was close to, you know, about 45% more effective. So the calories still counted.
Right.
But if you look at my, how I just explained that, frequency was my number one criteria. And then the quality, which is, we're looking for a higher protein, reduced, especially refined carbohydrates. I don't think you have a problem with eating too many, you know, apples or too much broccoli. and the last one was the quantity. So the calories still count. Naturally, as it today is March 27th, I have a study that came out in the Journal of Current Opinions in Gastroenterology. Came out 2 days ago, and they have concluded that low-carbohydrate, high-protein diets may be an effective choice for weight loss and improve metabolic parameters regardless of caloric intake. So that'd be my hierarchy of nutrition: increase the frequency, increase the quality, and then adjust the quantity.
Excellent. Excellent. See, you've made everything so simple.
It's all about the logic chain, baby.
There you go.
It's simply, if you had to eat every 2 hours, you'd make better choices anyway.
Sure.
So that's a more
sure.
powerful tool than having you. But if you take a, you know, I always picture like my dad or something this. Like if I told my dad who's gotten up and every morning he's had a tea and a piece of toast for probably 30 years, if I told him that he's got to have steamed egg whites, he's probably never going to do it. You know, but if I told him to add eggs to that breakfast, he'd probably undereat at his next meal as a
right.
result of the change with the addition of protein. So it's I think that we take baby steps with people and things usually work better.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Well, let's shift into the training side of things. You've recently produced a new DVD with Robert Dos Remedios, who is the strength and conditioning coach of the College of the Canyons, and you guys have done some other stuff in the past. But this is based on sort of like a metabolic acceleration program. In fact, that's what it's called. It's the Metabolic Acceleration DVD. And it's basically a philosophy. Why did this approach come to be? Because I think I've read some stuff that you've written about, and I've heard you talk about it, that again, it's one of those things that just sort of evolved
yeah.
from your needs, essentially, and but you found it to be quite effective.
Well, I keep using this analogy of the train today. I don't know why. It's like I recommended metabolic training where I was prescribing, I prescribed perhaps 10 reps and I want 4 seconds down, 2 seconds up, and then I want a 30-second rest period. But really what I was prescribing was 60 seconds of work followed by 30 seconds of rest. So I'd use some of these protocols with athletes because you can, if you just have a jiu-jitsu athlete doing running, they'll get in condition, but they're not going to be in condition for jiu-jitsu, which requires total body isometric holds and things like that. It's a different type of muscular demand. So we started to create these real sport-specific cardio protocols, and I realized that they were actually so intense that people were dropping fat quicker than necessarily doing the more traditional resistance training. So rather than give rather than prescribe a sets and reps, we just started prescribing, here's how you do the exercise perfectly. Go for 30 seconds, go for 40 seconds. And we started looking at these things, and I thought it would make the training more simpler, and I was hoping it would be just as effective, but it became more effective. So it was an interesting experiment for me. So what happened was I was doing a lot of stuff where I would have you alternate sets between lower body and upper body. So you do a lunge and then you do a dumbbell row perhaps. And then I'd hear, you know, some of the college kids would go away and they couldn't do that, or people would work with me online and they couldn't do it because in a commercial gym at 5 on a Monday night, you can't get this stuff done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I started to play with things like, well, maybe we could do a squat and then you do push-ups there, and I was using the same piece of equipment, or you do dumbbell presses and step-ups on the same bench. But I just felt then I was, like, I was making shit up, really.
know,
and I see other guys' programs, it's like 3 sets of 8 always, like no matter what the muscle is or what the movement is, it's always going to be 24 reps, like no matter what. I'm just like, they wrote that for convenience. They didn't write that based on physiology. So I was writing programs that were based on convenience, and I got away from physiology a little bit. So I started moving into making these metabolic protocols where we use one piece of equipment or 2 pieces of equipment, and we adjust the sets and reps, and you maybe squat for a minute with body weight and then push-ups for a minute and go back and forth. And it actually came as a sport-specific conditioning idea, and it's been interesting to see it as an adjunct to the fat loss programs.
Right. Just a word of warning, if you're going to start out with that type of training, it is rather intensive.
Yeah, I should say that.
So if you've never experienced the nausea associated with some of this stuff before, it can come back to bite you. But if I've used it, with several of my more advanced people, and it literally just did like a break-in program with them, sort of like using like a reverse Tabata, like a 10-second on, 20-second off kind of a transition, and then build them up slowly. It seems to go really, really well as far as comfort. Then it becomes even more effective, obviously, when they get into more intensive stuff. So,
well, I think that there's an interesting sort of attitude amongst fat loss clientele that an advanced fat loss program means it will work faster. And that's not the case at all. An advanced fat loss program is for someone who's very lean and has done everything right up to now.
Right.
I got an email from one of the powerlifters at Elite Fitness where I do some writing, and they said, I was going to start one of your programs, but it seems a bit basic for me because I've been lifting for, 25 years, blah, blah. But he said, I'm about 40 pounds overweight and my body fat's, 35% or something. Do you have a program for an advanced guy like myself? I'm like, how did you get advanced with 40 pounds overweight and 35%
right.
body fat?
Exactly.
I'm like, you're an advanced. I think that sometimes we do that is if you get if you got an advanced athlete, you think they need an advanced strength program, or sometimes they may never have strength trained before at all. Well, it's the same with fat loss, is that if you're not lean, basic fat loss is where we start, and we go up from
right.
there. We don't need. I'm known for bringing out a lot of tools for people who are having a hard time with things, but I start with tool number one: are you eating less and making better choices and eating
right.
good meal frequency? We don't open the box of tricks right away, because it's quite intense, and some people will just they won't want to do it. It becomes so hard that they just will give up. So it is
right.
intense for training.
I think it's a matter of trying to use the least complex method to get the maximum benefit before you move on to something else. And I don't think a lot of folks grasp that. They see a lot of this stuff and right away, obviously, if it's more complex and it's more difficult, it's got to be more effective. Well, the effectiveness is all based on where you are at this point and then move forward
exactly.
rather than jumping to the end of the train. There you go.
I think we all know that a 1,000-pound squat is far more effective than a 45-pound bar, unless you can only squat the 45-pound bar, in which case that 1,000 pounds will be a disastrous choice.
Yeah, I believe you said one time that you could do an explosive eccentric with a 1,000-pound bar.
Very, very explosive. The first part of the squat, not a problem for me going down. It's the getting back up where I'm not so good.
All right. You've already touched on this throughout this whole discussion. Obviously, you're very well engrossed into the latest research. I mean, having pulled a study from 2 days ago and from 1957, both with an impact on...
What a loser I am. Oh my God, I need to go and watch Lost or something good.
Yeah, there you go. I know that all of your quote unquote research that you've done to develop your program has essentially been done in the gym.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is like the real world kind of stuff. But is there anything from a research standpoint that you've come across that has caused you to make a significant change in what you were already doing?
The stuff that I'm looking at now, that there's some interest in. Been talking to Mike Russell and Cassandra Forsyth on stuff with blood triglyceride levels, because I think it's a marker of you don't want triglyceride in your blood because it's a marker of heart disease, etc. But
mm-hmm.
there's obviously some effects of getting it out of the cell into the blood. It can be then transported to the muscle and burned off. So there are some interesting things there recently. I won't go into that too much. But
is that similar to like a stubborn fat loss type protocol?
Yeah, some of that stuff. The hardest part is getting the fat out of the cell, right?
Right.
Fat loss is extremely simple when you get that part done. But it doesn't mean it's easy. It just means it's not complicated. I think that the big surprise for me is when I started to do, when I started to present, I felt that I've got before and after pictures, but I needed to, you know, have some what I call third-party validation. It's not my opinion. It becomes scientific evidence.
Right.
And so I started looking, you know, when I was doing presenting and talking to clients and things, and it actually amazed me how little support there is for aerobic exercise and fat loss. So I don't know where that, where this, how come we've embraced doing a cardiovascular steady state aerobic works for fat loss, how that's become so ingrained into society that that's what you do, because the, it's not there, that the research doesn't show it. When you start digging for, you know, the effect of aerobic training purely on fat loss, that there's nothing. It never worked. So I don't know why, like, when I present it, it seems like it's controversial, and I don't even know why. Like, I found, I've got studies that, in the real-world fat loss presentation that are, you know, I think that I've got a 3-month, a 6-month, and a 12-month study, and the 3-month, they do 45 minutes of aerobics 5 days a week. In the 12 months, they do 60 minutes of aerobics 6 days a week for the entire time frame. And they actually, the 12-month group, after the end, after doing 6 hours of aerobics a week for 52 weeks, they lost about 3 pounds. the other group showed no loss at all. So we're like, if you had to do, you know, what is that? 300 and, you know, something, 300 and...
That's ridiculous. 60
hours of aerobics a year, something like that, for
£3.
You could, I mean, that's 0.3 pounds a month. That's about a quarter bite of an apple a day in its dietary equivalent. So you can just see this. I don't know where that's the most confusing thing to me is, where did it come from? Because everyone recommends that. And I think what we've ignored is, I've used this analogy before. If you looked at life through a microscope, and you looked at weight training, a weight training session that started at 9 a.m. and finished at 10 a.m., and you stopped looking and presented your findings, you would have to come to the logical conclusion that weight training will destroy muscle tissue, make you weak and small.
Right.
Now, you have to come to that conclusion based on when you stopped looking. Whereas if you continue to look through the post-workout period, it makes you stronger and it makes your muscles bigger because of the adaptation. I think that's probably what happened with aerobics, is people looked at, during this activity, you're having an increased use of fat as a fuel source, and that will be good for burning off fat. But when we look at reality-based training, when we're looking at a period of 12 weeks or 6 months or a year, the reality appears not to match up. Like, it appears that it doesn't work. Something happens in the post-workout period where that no longer works. And there was also the studies comparing, you know, interval training against steady-state aerobic training. And you go, the interval training group actually burn less calories but seem to lose more fat. So I think at the post-workout period is the stuff where we've overlooked when we've recommended aerobics. So that was the biggest surprise to me, is how much stuff is does not seem to be supported. How many of our recommendations are complete dogma and, I guess, gym science as opposed to real science.
Right. Wow. Well, this has been excellent, my friend. I really appreciate you coming on and doing this for us.
Anytime.
It's been... terrific. I mean, it's so logical, and you've really mixed it down to its simplest, most understandable form. So again, I appreciate your thinking processes. Just again, let's review everything that you've got to offer. And I can't recommend your work highly enough to anybody that's interested.
I thought you were going to say you can't recommend it at all.
No, I recommend it to everybody. I'll give you a specific example. I have a online client that I work with, and he reads my blog when I do update it, and I regularly promote, you know, your products, because one, they're the best stuff out there. And, two, I like you as a human being, but, he sends me an email and he says, why do you keep promoting Alan Cosgrove's stuff? And I said, well, because he's right. I mean, and you are. And I think that, you know, just the thought process that you put into it, the experience that you've got, the real world experience. And again, I think that phrase is going to get overused by a lot of people who don't have it, but you really do. You've got the proof, and you know, you've thought this stuff through, and that's what makes it effective. So
I think I figured out we see somewhere in the region of 600 workouts a week at the gym.
Wow.
So that's 31,000 a year. And we've been open for 10 years now. So
you've only got 300,000 workouts to base this off of.
If you've been in my gym, you see every set of every rep is recorded and everyone's body comp is taken weekly. So I see things that work before most people. And I think I don't think there's too many people who I've never met anyone who's given. There's one guy who said he gives the complete opposite advice from me. And I asked him, like, can you send me some before and after pictures or, you know, some science behind what you're doing? Because if that's true, then we're both wrong. You know, I don't have a religious attachment to this. I'll change. But please, right. Please send me what you're doing. And I just got an email back that he just cursed me out, basically. And I was like, well, can you at least show me a bank statement that you're successful? And he goes, and you're not a 14-year-old boy in your mom's basement. I'm like, so it's I think a lot of times people who try to do something in the field, it starts with a passion to find an answer. And really that's what I come up with was, I was unhappy with the traditional recommendations. And it was quite surprising when I started looking and realized that what we were recommending in the gyms wasn't validated at all.
Right.
So here we are. And I expect that by the time, you know, 5 years from now, I'll disagree with everything that I said today.
Well, I think, you know, you're in this constant state of evolution. You've made, you know, consistent changes in what you've done over the past few years. Now, granted, they're much more subtle than they probably were, you know, 8-10 years ago. But still, as your thinking process evolves, as the research evolves, and as your experience continues to grow, I think it's just going to, you know, you're going to constantly be updating what you're already doing. It just makes sense.
Well, it's interesting, as I said to someone else, that it's now the little things that I see that I think that I've been vocal against fasted cardio. I think I have numbers to show that eating breakfast has as big a thermogenic effect as taking caffeine and doing cardio does. So
wow.
You may be able to have an egg and get the same benefits as a caffeine pill in 30 minutes on the treadmill. That's how powerful breakfast is.
Right.
You know, and it's, but all this said, I was at the IHRSA conference a couple of weeks ago, and they said that more people died of obesity in 2007 than actually died of malnourishment worldwide.
Wow.
And I'm like, we're talking about what the best fat loss methods is, and as a profession, we're just failing miserably. It seems so short-sighted to talk about what works better when, you know, hey, if you have an obese person who just hates the gym and wants to walk, absolutely get them out walking. You know, if we could help more people, then, you know, we'd be in better shape.
All right. Well, again, let me just thank you, and let's mention everything. You've got New Rules of Lifting is out. I just saw it on the shelf. I was in the bookstore yesterday. New Rules of Lifting for Women. Afterburn 1 and 2, which are terrific places to start, I think, for just about anybody. The Real World Fat Loss Presentation and the New Metabolic Acceleration DVD. Have I missed anything?
I think that's everything. The big difference would be that the Afterburn stuff is programs designed for an end user, and the Real World Fat Loss DVD and manual are aimed more at professionals who want to read the science behind what I'm doing. So it's they don't offer as much practical information as the Afterburn manuals do.
Terrific.
And maybe
well,
Afterburn 3 will come out one day.
There you go. That's what we're all looking for. All right, man. Well, I will be talking to you soon.
All right. Cheers, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.